This is the Chester County Real Estate Podcast, bringing you the info you need to make your next move a great one.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Chester County Real Estate Podcast. This is the show that gives you the information you need to make your next move a great one. Today, I'm sitting down with Sherry Haupt from the Housing Partnership of Chester County. We're going to talk a little bit about the organization, a little bit about what they do, and how they can help homebuyers in the Chester County area. So, Sherry, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So, could you tell us a little bit about the Housing Partnership of Chester County and your involvement in it and how long you've been a part of it?
Happy to. The organization has been around since 1988, working with first-time homebuyers in the education piece. I have been on board for 26 years now. I'm considered a HUD-certified housing counselor, which allows me to educate individuals, work with them, and offer down payment and closing cost assistance to first-time homebuyers that meet a particular income level.
Okay, cool. And so the Housing Partnership, well, who are they mainly serving?
Really, the population of Chester County, our footprint is the entire county, which is 73 municipalities that are what we call 80% of the area median income.
Okay. And so what do you help them do?
When a lot of individuals realize that they can actually pay a mortgage payment, they just don't have enough money to get the down payment and the closing costs. That's the hurdle for a lot of individuals.
Yeah.
And we educate them on the whole home buying process, what to anticipate, and offer that down payment and closing cost assistance of up to $20,000 at present.
Okay. Now, how does that work? Because a lot of loans require the down payment to come directly from the home buyer, right?
Well, with there, a lot of banks now have to follow the CRA guidelines, the Community Reinvestment Act.
Okay.
So the flexibility that they have for the loans, it can be in some cases as little as 3%. And it doesn't matter sometimes where that 3% always comes from. Like FHA can be very flexible. So they can have that or they can have a little bit in. So our guidelines are you have to have a minimum of $1,000 of your own money in. They have to be able to do that. So they're not going in that way. And actually, there are some conventional programs that are 100% financing. But something will be involved in that.
Now, is that like the VA and the USDA RD loans?
That's your government loans. There are conventional loans that are out there that some lenders are putting together that they need to have 100% financing that they can offer that in conventional. And they also offer other items as well. Community Reinvestment Act says that you have to reinvest in the community that you serve. Banks have to follow that to receive a certain amount of tax credits. If they're not doing it. So they offer first-time homebuyer programs that discounts interest rates, discounts origination fees. They offer programs that have no PMI. They also offer additional grants that can be used in conjunction with our money.
How long has that been a thing? Like when did that start, the Community Reinvestment Act?
That's a very good question. I should have that answer. It's been around for quite some time.
Yeah, like a couple years or a couple decades?
A couple decades.
Okay, yes. All right. Because I'm trying to remember, and I was just talking to a lender the other day, and he was talking about what defines a first-time home buyer, which was kind of surprising to me because I didn't understand why the bank would care whether or not someone was a first-time home buyer or not.
Correct.
Is it probably because of the Community Reinvestment Act?
Yes, absolutely. Making those funds available. And also, too, we're right in the shadows here of the 55th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act being done. So we have a task when you're HUD approved to affirmatively further fair housing that's going on. And by doing these first-time programs, it allows that. It creates more of a level playing ground for all different groups.
So real quick, one thing I think would be important to define a first-time home buyer.
Yes. Okay.
So the definition that you're using, what does that
A first-time home buyer is someone who hasn't had any real estate in their name within the last 3 years.
Right. So it's not necessarily someone who's never owned real estate.
That is correct.
But if you owned and then didn't, you
right back to the first time. It's a reset button. Exactly right. So especially, and that's really great for a lot of individuals who have been maybe through a divorce or, you know, went through a financial crisis, sold it. It's not like you're excluded. You certainly can become that after 3 years with your name off that deed.
So at what point do people come and see you? Like, did they find the house? Do they have an agent and a lender already and they're coming to you for extra help? Like the lender sends them to you? or are they coming to you first because they don't really know where else to get started?
That's a good question. They come to me at all different times. Ideally, they should come to me first. I'm the point of first contact.
Right.
Because a lot of times when you found the house and you find the lending, or you're actually under agreement of sale and settlement is about 4 weeks,
yeah,
and you realize you don't have enough money, that's not the time to do this in reverse because mm-hmm. you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. So do you help the buyers find the programs like these 100%?
Oh, have the knowledge. I'm required to be able to share that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, absolutely.
So not all banks and lenders will have the same program. Like
that's
you'd have
correct.
To find one that has it.
No two mortgages are exactly alike.
Right.
So there's different programs and depending on how sweet they can make the deal. Many different programs to look at. But mm-hmm. there are some exciting programs right now, especially with the release of First Front Door on March the 15th. There's an additional $5,000 available.
Okay, so what's tell us more about that.
For First Front Door.
Yeah.
If a bank is a member of the Federal Home Loan Bank of Pittsburgh,
okay.
they can apply for the client on the client's behalf for an additional $5,000.
So where's that, like, what is that, a loan, a grant, how's that work?
What would be termed as a forgivable loan, which means as long as you stay in the house for 5 years, that $5,000 would be forgiven.
Okay. And where's that coming from? Is this coming from the bank or from the...
Federal Home Loan Bank of Pittsburgh will do it. So they tap into Federal Home Loan Bank of Pittsburgh, but the mm-hmm. lender, the current lender, has to be a member mm-hmm. to do that. And that you can very easily see who is and who isn't from the website.
Does programs like that only work for certain areas? Like I know there's been opportunity zones in the past,
yes.
innovation zones, and then we have the USDA, the RD loans are mm-hmm. like area specific. Are some of these area specific?
Not particularly.
Okay.
No, it's really for someone who's 80% of the median income.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But they would still have to qualify for the monthly payment as far as their
Absolutely.
Debt and income ratio.
They have to qualify. It just helps bridge the gap. So since I offer up to $20,000, if we can stack it with the First Front Door, what was $20,000 is now $25,000. It just mm-hmm. creates a little bit more of an opportunity to, you know, be more creative.
So when someone's come into the housing partnership and they're borrowing the money for the closing costs or down mm-hmm. payment, what kind of terms does that do they have to repay that back on?
That's a very good question. There's three terms.
Yeah.
They're going to have to repay back when they sell the property,
mm-hmm.
when they refinance it, or if they transfer it to somebody else. It must be their primary residence. So they can't own it and be a landlord and profit from it. This is not for their profit.
Right.
They pay it back.
So there's not a monthly payment for this. It's
payment.
A loan, but it's not a monthly payment. So basically, it's mm-hmm. almost like you're allowing them to borrow against their future equity.
Yes.
In a way.
Right. This is a deferred loan.
Yeah.
So it does not impact their debt to income ratios, which is very nice. Lenders are very appreciative of that, the primary mm-hmm. lender. And it just allows them, yes, I guess you could say that, it could do it. And it's dollar for dollar because it's 0%
right.
interest deferred.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you're going to stay in a house for 5 to 10 years and there's going to be some, hopefully, some equity.
Correct.
You know, barring any catastrophe like 2008. But it's like, well, that equity is, you can use that now, that future equity now, that makes a lot of sense. And when you look at it like that, it's not like you're necessarily in debt. It's your money just in the future.
Correct.
I know we want to keep it all positive, but what if something happened in 2008 and in the future now for whatever reason, they're selling it short? Is it similar to the process of selling short to like with a bank loan or filing for bankruptcy? Like what if they're unable to pay that in the future for whatever reason?
That since we're under contract with the Department of Community Development, we would take that issue with them and see what they have to say.
I haven't really
cross that path.
So it's just a matter of looking at the different resources and stuff. And it probably would be similar to filing bankruptcy or going, you know, into foreclosure or short sales and having the different options depending on the situation.
Right. And because of all the education, that is greatly reduced.
Yeah.
That is greatly reduced. And HUD has proven that those who are educated in the home buying process are much more likely to succeed in home ownership.
Really?
That's why it's like, the percentage has certainly changed, but it is significant. So the bottom line is the whole education process has greatly reduced that. So they're not just coming in and saying, hey, give me some money.
Yeah.
They're going through basically a good 11 hours of education.
Let's talk a little bit more about the education. 'Cause
okay.
as an agent, it's like,
yes.
you know, we do some degree of education. Sure. But by the time you're talking to a real estate agent, it's like, oh, we want to go see the house. And you're like, oh, let's talk about how mortgages and titles and deeds work. And they're kind of like, okay, whatever. Let's talk. Like, all they want to do is look at the kitchen. And you're trying to explain to them how all this works. So a little bit about your education, what that involves. And I'd love to hear some of the topics that you cover and some of the things that, like, you see, like, as really important. Like, I want to hear what are the things that people need to know that they're not learning in school. The real estate agents may or may not be telling them, and then they're finding out at closing or years down the road. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like people need to know?
Savings.
Yeah.
It's not in our culture now, this culture as a whole. It's not encouraged to save. In fact, that's an afterthought. Where if we went back a few generations, the first thing that came to mind is savings. So whenever you speak to the individuals, the clients, what does a lender look at to qualify you? It's income, credit, and maybe they'll come up with a savings piece. Maybe. And so now we have that magic, I call it the magic debit card. We are sitting there swiping, and it's really an arrogance. I feel that I pay as I go. I don't write anything down. The receipts, I don't need the receipt, or it's emailed to me, and that's swiped, gone.
Right.
And that's foolishness. Nobody even knows to look at their bank statements. It's on my phone.
If I need it, it's there.
It's all on that. But the problem is when I do have the clients, the first time they ever look at their bank statements is when I need 3 months of bank statements. And I go through them and I educate them on the process. They're not even aware that they're being charged a monthly fee. Mm-hmm. They're not even aware of ATM fees. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fine because I was at Wawa. They don't even know how much is coming out or that their balance is negative. So a savings account is a source of credit for a bank. And when you're sitting there, it's not a credit report. It's just, but if I'm going to a financial institution asking for six digits, they're going to look at your financial institution you work with on a monthly basis and see how you do your bills. Mm-hmm. And if it's negative at the end of the month, why would they give you something so big when you can't handle something so small? Mm-hmm. And that's what they need to do. So that's the lack of what they have and the willingness to give to that. So our wants outweigh our needs is what has happened. So eating out every day, multiple times a day, and not putting two and two together that I need to budget, I need to pace myself and have more self-discipline. That self-discipline for a lot of people is just not there.
Yeah, and speak from experience. There's that element of like, it doesn't feel like I'm spending a lot of money. It doesn't feel like I'm going out that often.
Little bits.
And you know, I don't go to anywhere really nice. And when I go to the restaurant, it doesn't feel like I'm spending too much money or so. And then you just get used to like, oh, you know,
it's nice and cheap.
$10 lunch is bad. $12 lunch isn't that, $16 lunch. That's not too far off. Then you go out to dinner and it's like, well, you know, but it used to be like $30 or $40. Now it's closer to $60. Mm-hmm. But that's just, it doesn't feel like I'm spending a lot of money.
Right. Correct. And then you get your statement. This is when the first time I ever realized that gasoline was going up, I was looking at the statement. I'm like, one. I've flipped the paper. one charge on that. It's little bits equals a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. I love the convenience that's available to us. I love the idea of Uber and DoorDash and Instacart and stuff.
And now, I hate it.
I mean, personally, I've DoorDashed maybe twice, and every time I'm like, why did I pay so much money for cold food? So it's like, I get it if you're it's great for like, I remember, okay, here's an example. So I'm going to defend it a little bit because I love the, I love the idea that this is there. But you know, like if, I think when my wife had our last kid, it was nice that people brought meals, but if they weren't able to, they could give us a DoorDash gift card. And that was nice. You know, she didn't have to get up. She had the meals coming. She could, you know, it was a great gift. It's gotten to the point where I'm like, do people think like $25 for, you know, the meal plus the trip plus the tip, like that's normal to spend? It's kind of crazy.
That's the point. Nobody's looking. Mm. They don't know. Why I hate it. It's a great concept, especially after COVID.
Yeah.
What I don't like about it is that people are not looking at their expenses and they can't put two and two together. But they're saying, Sherry, come help me. I want to buy a house, but I have nothing in my bank account. In fact, my bank account's negative.
Yeah.
And I want a house.
Yeah.
And that's what – so if it hinders you – because remember, convenience equals costs.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't do grocery shopping at a Wawa. Wawa's greatest invention ever.
Yeah, right.
But you wouldn't get a shopping cart and do, because then everybody absolutely agrees, oh no, it would be too expensive.
Right, right.
That's just not where you would go.
It's a convenience store.
And yeah. Convenience equals cost. So there's a price mm-hmm. to pay for that convenience. And the problem is when the convenience outweighs what your needs are, that is an issue. And that stops my clients from moving forward and mm-hmm. obtaining their goal, because they don't believe that their goal is obtainable. So I like to have it. It's a dream. Mm-hmm. But how do we make the dream a reality?
Are there any practical steps that you kind of give generally to people? I don't want to pick on the millennials. Balancing a checkbook, it's not that they don't want to, it's just like it's hard to, they don't have to. Like there's no checkbook. They might write some checks, but for the most part, like you're just putting in, you know, you can just open up that app. So between credit cards mm-hmm. and the apps, which is great convenience, do you recommend people like go back to checkbooks or, you know, Dave Ramsey's envelope system or something like that.
Dave Ramsey has many good ideas in doing that. Remember, a debit card is a check writing card. So every time you're swiping it, you're writing a check.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that should be written down. Nobody wants to write it down. When you're writing
like
it down.
Like a pen?
Sure. Go old school because you're in tune with it.
Yeah.
You know exactly where your money's going. And then it's a mirror in front of your face saying, this is getting out of control.
Mm-hmm.
If I go and get a coffee every day when I mm-hmm. could have made it at my home, you know, made it at home and taken it with me, I would say is have that one day of the week where you treat yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some clients, they take it back to work because there's always a peer pressure among your coworkers about going out and getting something.
Yeah,
they took it back to their office and they all agreed that Friday would be their day to get the coffee, to go out to lunch, and they look forward to it and became the event and had more meaning versus what do we eat today? I didn't even taste it. I was in a hurry.
Right.
But it cost me $10, $12, $15 plus the gas and the time to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to think about the gasoline and how that wear and tear on the car for all these little trips and stops.
Yeah.
We need to think about, or if I do order it in, I'm paying all the tips and their gas and their insurance to get in. So I have to think about all those
things. Plus you don't have a break anymore.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day I was working a hourly job and we had a half hour lunch break, which seems kind of crazy looking mm-hmm. back on it, but that was like just enough time to go to Burger King, come back, or go to Chick-fil-A and come back. And then I started packing a lunch and I was like, wow, I could just sit here
and
like read
relax.
A book or just yes. not work for 30 mm-hmm. minutes. And it was like, wow, this is like a great secret.
But if you go to any park around here, Chester County has wonderful libraries. They have wonderful parks and really use them. I always encourage the clients, pack a lunch, get the cooler, pack your water, mm-hmm. and then you'll go to the parks. You'll see people just sitting there, closing their eyes and zoning out and tuning out and catching their breath, having their lunch, and then they go back to the office.
Yeah.
Take advantage of that opportunity with the weather getting nicer.
Absolutely. Yeah. How do you feel about all these little, do you feel like the little monthly charges have gotten kind of out of hand too?
Because that's
another thing too. It's like, well, you know, I have a $10 Netflix subscription. I have this subscription. I have that subscription.
They're all going up.
But it's only like a little bit.
So when it goes up a little bit per month, like Netflix for me went up like $1.50 last year. So $1.50 times 12 months, where does that get you?
Yeah.
You know, that's another, you know, it's $18 on top of everything. If you have a $3 increase on a particular bill, that's $36 a year. Never look at it on a monthly basis. Look at it on an annual basis.
Okay.
That's the secret. Because, you know, when cell phones first running out, the family plans, you add another line for $10 a month. Parents are adding their kids. You have two kids, $10, $10. Okay. If they said for $120 a year, you can add an extra line, nobody would have done it.
Right.
But those two lines, you just added $240 more per year
to your
phone bill. Is that worth it? That's only $10 per month per child. But you didn't do the math.
Right. Well, and also you don't have to like, if you have to decide once a year, and I've experienced this with some business oriented expenses. If I have to make it, sometimes I like the yearly payments because it's like, I'm just going to pay for this software and I have, you know, I can use it for the whole year. So if I don't use it for a month, I'm not like thinking about that. But at the same time, it's like for the cell phones or for the Netflix, mm-hmm. it's like, well, come this time next year, like, are you going to want to write that $240 check or mm-hmm. swipe that, because it's like it's making you think about it, where if it's just a monthly thing, you're like, well, I could cancel it, but that would save me $10 this month. That's not a huge deal. But if you're thinking about spending, you know, if you're going to have to write that check, and one thing that I do think Dave Ramsey's on point about too is when you I don't know if this was a study or if this is, I don't know the validity of this, but he said basically when there was a study where someone pays something with cash, the receptors in the brain basically feel pain. Like it's painful to pay your cash. He's like, when you swipe a debit card, it's less painful. And then a credit card, nothing at all. So it's like almost like we internalize this idea that like cash is real and credit is not. So it's way easier to swipe a credit card than it is to hand cash. So I would extrapolate that to like, it's going to be way harder to pay that $100 year bill versus that $8 a month bill. It's just, you know,
it's hard. Well, on that point, I do tell the clients when they come in, I said, when you look at the statement and you see all these fees coming out, I said, think about that. And there's no emotion on it. I said, now I want you to convert that to cash, and I want you to take a match, and I want you to light it. Okay, I want you to burn it right in front of me. And they always get the big eyes. I wouldn't do that. I said, you just did.
Right.
And it was really that one little simple exercise that makes people go, oh my goodness, what am I doing? I'm letting it just go. I have a problem with a lot of things going on my credit card. I feel pain because I know in the back end, there's a rule. The credit card is to be paid in full every month. We don't live on that debt, especially now with the interest rates being so high. So I do feel pain. Other people, you're right, may not. And I'm sitting there writing it down. So if you're going to swipe a debit card because that you want to have that, then you need to go, as they said, in your register, write it. I mean, if you want to do a spreadsheet, whatever you want to do, but sit down and write it down and deduct it already because you know it's already gone.
Right.
And, you know, just write it down. If you don't write it down, you shouldn't be spending it. But really, the whole exercise of a bank charging, say, $5 a month and, you know, those ATM fees, and that didn't bother you electronically, putting it into cash would.
What I took away from the one thing you said was almost like, this is like you are the bank, or we say you are the funder. It's like, you know, funding your, instead of looking at like Visa or the bank is like, oh, I have this line of credit. It's like, I could have my own line of credit that I kind of borrow against.
Correct.
But in reality, it's just my bank account.
And you should definitely have, there's different layers I have. There's like checking, savings, or liquid accounts. And ideally, you should have 6 months emergency savings on hand. Well, how do I know what that is? Something called a budget. Put it down, multiply it by six, and people think that's just not obtainable. But really, when you sit down and you give it a try, you start building up and building up. Because if you lose your job, it's been proven it could take you 6 months or more to have that level. And right now, we know part of what's going down is like job availability is supposedly coming down a bit. I've had clients say, you know, I lost my job, I'm looking at that. So I try to help them and direct them to kind of find what they need to find. But when you're trying to do that, you need to have that liquidity available to you to cover the bills and so you can sleep at night.
Do you have any resources for people who are looking for the job placement or looking for a job or training, or where do you usually direct people who struggle in that area?
Well, those who have already graduated from college always say, go speak to your career center at your alma mater. You know, like I'm a Penn Stater and they have a huge service for that. And a lot of people just don't utilize. I was saying to a friend recently, I said, do they hit you up for money all the time? She goes, yes. I said, then you need to make a phone call and you need some help with the resume builder information. The county has great resources as far as job fairs and different amount. Of course, CareerLink right in Exton. And they'll help you with your resume, putting that together. I've worked with OIC and it's now in the city of Coatesville.
What's CareerLink? Is that a nonprofit organization or a government organization?
I'm not even sure how they're structured. It's there for everyone to use. It's huge. It's, and they have different types of seminars and availability and listing to help you guide you through with that. And OIC can do some of the same thing. Sometimes they have received notices of jobs before other people receive notices of jobs. But there's always a job fair going on somewhere in the county. You'll have 60, 70 employers at one spot. That's great to get out and just practice your interviewing skills.
Yeah. I was talking to someone just yesterday, and they just got this great job. They're all excited. And they're like, yeah, but I applied to I mean, these are napkin numbers, but he said he sent out like 100 applications and went on 20 interviews.
Yes, that's so exhausting.
The job market is tough, depending on how you define it, but it's not necessarily easy to find a job, and people are going to have to put a little effort into that.
Yes.
So
you do have to effort in your P's and Q's and managing it.
So yeah, so having that 6 months of savings, because if you do ever have to draw from it,
yes,
it's a little bit different than a line of credit, because that line of credit comes back with interest.
Correct. It's charging you.
Yeah.
It's absolutely right. And you know that the line of credit is there. And it may not be a bad idea to have one, but at the same time, it's not a long-term solution. It's a short-term solution that's going to create another problem.
Yeah. So before we go, we've talked a lot about the getting prepared to financially get their first home. How do you prepare first-time home buyers in what it's going to look like maintenance-wise, responsibility-wise, ongoing cost? I know when I bought my first home, and then I looked into like, oh, it'd be nice to replace the siding, and then I was like, oh, I'm not going to be doing that. Oh, you know, let's redo the sidewalk. Oh, that's you know, like, and you realize very quickly that those things you see on TV, like, it's that.
HGTV?
Yeah, that can be quite an investment.
Correct.
And then kind of determining like the ongoing maintenance stuff doesn't necessarily come back to you in equity, you know?
And, no, it doesn't.
And so just kind of preparing people in the responsibility of home ownership. What are some of the things that you usually tell people?
That's a good question. HUD requires of all housing counselors to prepare someone for life after settlement. So it's not only my job to get them to the settlement table, it's also my job to keep them there and to prepare all the way up to the time that they buy their next home. That is a responsibility of a counselor.
Okay.
So we do talk about, you know, when you do move in, set up your budget. It's going to probably take a good year to set up an effective budget. One of the biggest things when we go through the budget up front when they're renting is home maintenance and furnishings. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't have that. You know, and it's like, no, of course not. I said, this is going to be next to your mortgage is your number one payment on your credit report. Next to that, the next thing that it is maintaining funds for the repairs, which is constant repairs. Mm-hmm. Set up maintenance schedules of all the systems of the home, all the appliances, the heating, the air conditioning. Know how long that is.
Do you help them with that?
I give them ideas. I haven't sat down with them on that. And to do that and to be aware of that, because things, appliances, I had a repairman, he says 3 to 7 years is what appliances last. And I've seen that. I'm on my fourth washer machine in 21 years. But these are the things that you go through because it's a lot of wear and tear.
I found out the hard way. The air filters in your HVAC need to be replaced.
The hard way.
So when they said that, I was like, they're like, oh, how often do you do it? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I have a guy come out once a year, and I think he does it. And they're like, yeah, that's supposed to be done every 3 months. I'm like, oh.
It's just.
Oh, really? But that's like the little things. It's like, even as an agent, like, you're going to try to help your buyers as much as possible.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if you're, you know, it doesn't really come. I don't want to give parents a hard time. It's like, oh, that's what your father should have told you. And it's like, let's not give them too hard a time. It doesn't really come up that often.
Right.
You know, like, there's a lot of things that parents just assume that their adult children already know.
Correct.
Like, replace the air filter in your HVAC system. However, you can go through the process and no one actually tell you that. Like, it did for me years ago. I'm older now, I think. So that's where another thing where it's like, I'm glad that there's a place to learn this stuff. You would think, like, I don't know if there was, apparently there was like this thing called home ec back in the day.
Home ec, yes, I remember it well.
So
sewing machines, scrubbing dishes.
I never got that. So I think that's one thing the millennial generation, I guess it was an elective or something at some
point.
It
was mandatory for me. I had it. And then it was, you could go on and take other classes. But that industrial arts wing was removed for all kinds of technology. Mm-hmm. And another big loss, too, is the kids are not learning how to write cursive anymore. They don't know how to sign their names. And we have wet ink signatures at the settlement table.
Yeah.
And they don't know. So if they practice it, it took one couple really long to get through the settlement because they were trying to be real nice and neat with their name and spell it out.
Uh-huh.
They just weren't used to it. Now we just go, you know.
Right.
And kids can't do that.
Well, I think that's great. What's the best way for someone who is looking for, I guess they're not even quite sure.
Sure.
And they just want to start the conversation with you guys. What's the best way for them to get a hold of the housing partnership?
And whatever they feel most comfortable with. Of course, I'm there on something called a telephone, extension 102. And I'm happy to get it. If I'm not there to answer it, just leave a voicemail and I'll be happy to talk to you. When you're talking about the biggest purchase for most people for the rest of, for the rest of their lives, you want to spend some time.
Mm-hmm.
Give it the time. This is not a drive-through process.
Mm-hmm.
Give it some time. They can call me. They can email me. I'm right on our website. Mm-hmm. Or you can go right to our website, read the information, go over it, print the application, submit it in to us, gather the items that we need, and we'll go it. So they can start reading if they don't want to, or they just ask me.
Yeah. What's the website?
It's called housingpartnershipcc.com.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Chester County Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by RE/MAX Ace Realty, serving buyers and sellers in the Chester County area. Subscribe for new episodes at acerealtypa.com/podcast. And you can find us on Facebook, YouTube, and wherever podcasts are found.